Natural Living with Gary Nall, Mondays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is the one radio program in all of radio for open-minded, progressive-minded, and independent-minded thinkers. This is where we come together to look at ideas that are not being discussed in mainstream media, and instead looking at ways we can empower ourselves. Today, I won't have a guest. We have a guest who was going to be here, but he can't make it today. So I'm going to talk about a letter by Kurt Nimmo to Glenn Beck. And someone sent me over the audio feed of Glenn Beck's show today where they were saying it's all nonsense about aspartame is totally safe. No, it isn't, Glenn. I suggest in the future you really get an expert or a scholar who can do research for you. Also, the latest on fiber that can stop that surge in blood sugar, and a special in-depth analysis of rebalancing your body's hormones naturally. What caused them to go out of balance? How do you put them back into balance? I will be taking calls during at least half of today's program, and our call-in number for anywhere in the United States is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Let's begin. There are now, according to the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition, as little as 7 grams of fiber in the average person's diet. However, depending upon the type of fiber, you can reduce your blood glucose responses by almost 50% over a 2-hour period. And that will substantially help you if you're pre-diabetic or diabetic or suffering from hypoglycemia. Here's what it says from Professor Miller at the University of Sydney. It says, biologically important dose-related effects on acute and delayed second meal postprandial glycemia. That's scientific jargon for if you take quality fibers each day, especially cereal fibers from oats, for example, you can lower that blood sugar. And that helps prevent that up and down yo-yo of feeling good, feeling bad, good and bad. Now, screen time linked to psychological problems in children. This is from the University of Bristol. And it says, children who spend longer than 2 hours in front of a computer or television are more likely to suffer psychological difficulties, regardless of how physically active they are. The Peach Project studied over 1,000 children between 10 and 11 years of age, and they measured the time children spent in front of the screen, either computer or television, and how that correlated to their psychological well-being. In addition, an activity monitor recorded both children's sedentary and moderate physical activity. The results show that more than 2 hours per day of both television viewing and recreational computer use were related to higher psychological difficulty scores, and didn't matter how much activity, the physical activity they had. And the lead author, Dr. Page, University of Bristol Center for Exercise, Nutrition, and Health Sciences, quote, while low levels of screen viewing may not be problematic, we cannot rely on physical activity to compensate for long hours of screen viewing. Watching TV or playing computer games for more than 2 hours a day is related to greater psychological difficulties, irrespective of how much physical activity. Well, now think of how much time the average kid in the United States spends in front of a television or computer. It's over 7 hours a day. Then look at the challenges they're having. Hyper, bored, restless, angry, reactive, hostile, indifferent, and disconnected. So this is where we have to come to grips with having the discipline to say no. When I was raising my daughter, Shelley, all the kids that were her friends enjoyed coming over to the apartment. We only had a small one-room apartment on Weston Avenue. And It was because there was more fun. I would tell him about history, but make it interesting. And then one of the kids says, "Where's your television?" I said, "I don't have one." "What do you mean you don't have a television?" I said, "No." And then Shelley says, "No, every day I read. Every day I study something about life." And they just couldn't wrap their mind around the idea of not being fully distracted and entertained by television. But then again, look at what happens when we become addicted to something that's merely a distraction, and more often than not a trivia distraction, whereas we could be filling our brain and consciousness and our lives with something that's meaningful and full and substantive. That's where we're at today. Study finds monarch butterflies use medicinal plants to treat offspring for disease. This is from Emory University. I'll quote this. This is monarch butterflies. By the way, those are the most beautiful butterflies. Appear to use medicinal plants to treat their offspring for disease. This is in the peer-reviewed journal Ecological Letters. Quote, "We have shown that some species of milkweed, the larva's food plants, can reduce parasitic infection in the monarchs. And we have also found that infected female butterflies prefer to lay their eggs on plants that will make their offspring less sick, suggesting that monarchs have evolved the ability to medicate their offspring." Just as a little side on that, in the wild, grooming is done on one level as a way of social bonding, but on another level it's just very practical. They'll methodically go through every inch of your hair and skin and see if there's any parasites or any form of little insect, in which case they bite it off and kill it. And that way it lessens the opportunity for illnesses. They're not taught to do that. They've evolved that. We also know that certain animals will eat certain plants when they're sick, but not eat those plants when they're well. And then when they analyzed the nature, chemical composition of the plants, they had specific qualities that would help an animal if they suffer from poisonings. This is rather interesting. If we look carefully at what information nature can share with us. This is the latest. America is a nation of widespread health and nutrition illiteracy. And I'm not just talking about the knowledge gaps of health consumers either. It's the doctors and the so-called health experts who have astonishing gaps in the knowledge that should be considered basic health information in any first world nation. Parents, too, lack any real literacy in nutrition and health. That's largely because medical journals and health authorities and the mass media actively misinform them about health and nutrition issues, hoping to prevent people from learning how to take care of their own health using natural remedies. Now, here are some shocking examples of the huge gaps in knowledge among doctors, parents, and others. And by the way, and today there was a report on Fox News where they were attacking Jerry Brown because at some point 15 years ago, he said that the number of women who benefited from discovering cancer because of a mammogram was so minute that it did not warrant doing it. And they were criticizing him for that. Here's what they left out, and they could have easily discovered this. That mammograms, the way women use them today, will cause more cancer and hence kill more women than women who will discover cancer and be saved because of it. But many individuals, including the leading advocate in this field, Dr. Samuel Epstein, have been talking about this for decades. I remember first interviewing Dr. Samuel Epstein in 1977 on my WBAI show, the first year I was on, and he was talking about the dangers of mammograms. And at that time, it was being suggested that women have a mammogram every year, starting as young as 10. Well, by the time he said that you're 20 years old, you already have enough radiation in you to guarantee that you're going to get cancer at some point in your life. And yet, every single year, women will line up and do the pink ribbon thing and do whatever they're told without any science to back it up. Well, today they were attacking Jerry Brown, who actually had it right. And yet, Brown wasn't even reciting the literature that showed that it'll do more harm than good, nor were they having anyone on who could document that and nail it. Most conventional doctors don't know that the National Institutes of Health actively funded and operated criminal medical experiments on human prisoners. Most parents have no idea that processed meats, bacon, sausage, sandwich, ham, bologna, are laced with sodium nitrite and coloring chemicals that promote aggressive brain, pancreas, and colon cancers. Most doctors have no idea that the seasonal flu vaccines are little more than quackery and simply don't offer any real protection against the flu. Very few parents know the difference between the words natural and organic on food labels. Most parents just think natural means organic, and so they buy more products that claim to be natural, even when the word means nothing. Few doctors realize that statin drugs were engineered from a molecule called lovastatin, found naturally in red yeast rice. The drug companies pirated the molecule from nature, biopiracy, then patented it. Then they pressured the FDA to declare the red yeast rice was an adulterated supplement because, get this, it naturally contains a drug they stole from it. That's why the FDA was on a rip for about 5 years, not wanting people to use red yeast rice. And yet, all of us who are clinicians in the field and advocates know that red yeast rice can help a person lower their cholesterol levels. Most parents are completely befuddled by the nutritional claims of infant formula. They are astonishingly unaware that some of the most popular infant formula products, such as Similac, are made with over 50% sugars. Virtually no one outside the natural health community knows that soy protein, in the common grade that is sold in most stores, is extracted using a toxic explosive chemical called hexane. Very few people know that the carmine, food coloring used in fruit punch drinks and strawberry yogurt, is actually made from smashed red beetles. Most doctors remain completely unaware of the anti-cancer nutrients found in celery, grapefruit, cabbage, and chocolate. They tend to believe that medicine comes from laboratories, not food. And very few parents are aware that processed milk and dairy products promote obesity and heart disease and acne in their teenage children. Astonishingly, most adults have been fooled into thinking that yogurt is good for them because it contains probiotics. And most people of all ages come to think of it, believe that frozen yogurt is somehow good for them, even though it's really just processed ice cream sprinkled with probiotic powder. And they never tell you how much probiotics are in there. All they have to do is put a tiny amount, just enough to make label claims. Oh, we got probiotics. Well, okay. How many? What is the source? Is it a non-dairy probiotic? Is it enteric-coated so it passes the intestine or the stomach and gets into the intestine? What exactly is it? How many parts per million or billion do you have? Oh, you get none of that, do you? Because in most cases, you'd find that they just have a tiny amount, really meaningless. You start getting up to 5 to 10 billion of non-dairy probiotics in combination, well, then you're doing real good. They don't. Most doctors are completely unaware of the health dangers of aspartame and MSG and make no attempt to educate their patients about avoiding these excitotoxins. Most people don't know if they sign up for an organ donor, literally millions of dollars may be made off your body parts while your organs can go anywhere. Also, if you're an organ donor recipient, you may receive a cancer-ridden, diseased organ as your new transplant. Think cooking on non-stick cookware safe? Most people have no idea that the non-stick cookware surfaces are made of highly toxic chemicals, and if you heat a non-stick pan on the stove, it will actually off-gas enough toxic chemicals to adversely affect you. Very few doctors know that the human body has a second brain. It's located in your gut, and it's a highly complex mass of interconnected neurons that give real intelligence to your digestion and your interactions with food. A typical conventional doctor cannot tell you the health benefits of blueberries, even though blueberries can make statin drugs obsolete for many people. Most doctors do not know the truth about how toxic chemotherapy is for patients, but they won't tell patients the details of what they know. Turns out that 91% of oncologists would not choose chemotherapy for themselves. So why do conventional medical doctors remain so ignorant of the basics of human health and nutrition? Because medical schools don't teach health. They teach disease and surgery and pharmacology. They offer little to nothing in the way of good nutrition. Disease prevention or mind medicine is simply considered too arcane. So the doctors that graduate from medical school are nutritionally illiterate and lacking even the basic health knowledge. Yet at the same time, they're being told that they know everything about health in the human body. So they suffer from the most dangerous combination of all, a smug know-it-all attitude combined with far-reaching health illiteracy. And this is one of the key reasons why America's health care system is such an utter failure. The people who are supposed to possess more health knowledge than everyone else are the very same people who actually lack it. In a sense, they have been de-educated by medical schools and come out knowing less than they did when they entered medical school. And that's some thoughts from Mike Adams. And the Chinese mushroom found to have powerful anti-aging benefits. As correct, the cordyceps, C-O-R-D-Y-C-E-P-S, mushroom, is back in the spotlight again because of its anti-aging properties. And research at a major institution found that the traditional Chinese mushroom is a powerful anti-aging food with the ability to improve energy metabolism, decrease fatigue, bolster endurance levels, and lengthen lifespan. So, cordyceps into your diet. And finally, coconut oil and Alzheimer's. There is a connection. How worried should drug companies be about supplements eating into their monopoly profits? Well, of course, just about everyone worries about Alzheimer's at some age. It currently affects between 5 and 6 million people in the United States and is the seventh leading cause of death. It costs about $148 billion a year. And Dr. Mary Newport, a medical doctor, has been medical director of the neonatal intensive care unit at Spring Hill Regional Hospital in Florida since it opened many years ago, 2003. About the same time the unit opened, her husband, who was 53, began showing signs of progressive dementia, later diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Many days, often for several days in a row, he was in a fog, couldn't find a spoon or remember how to get water out of the refrigerator. They started him on Alzheimer's drugs, Aricept and Exelon, but his disease worsened steadily. And it should be noted that the latest research shows that the various Alzheimer's drugs, like Aricept, have proven disappointing with very little real benefit and often distressing side effects. When Dr. Newport couldn't get her husband into a drug trial for a new Alzheimer's medication, she started researching the mechanisms behind Alzheimer's. And she discovered that with Alzheimer's disease, certain brain cells may have difficulty utilizing glucose and the brain's principal source of energy. Without fuel, this precious combination of nutrients getting to the neurons caused the neurons to die. There's an alternative energy source for brain cells, fats known as ketones. If deprived of carbohydrates, the body produces ketones naturally. But this is a hard way to get it. And who wants to cut carbs out of the diet completely? It's bad. And another way to produce ketones is by consuming oils that have medium-chain triglycerides. Well, when medium-chain triglyceride oil is digested, the liver converts it into ketones. And in the first few weeks of life, ketones provide about 25% of the energy for newborn babies. They need it to survive. Well, Dr. Newport learned that the ingredient in the drug trial, which was showing so much promise, was simply oil derived from coconut or palm kernel oil, and that a dose of about 20 grams, that's about 4 teaspoons, was used to produce these results. So when she used the coconut oil and how it's metabolized in the body, the ketones which the body creates may, according to the latest research, not only protect against the incidence of Alzheimer's, but actually help reverse it. Moreover, there's also potential treatment for Parkinson's disease and Huntington's disease and multiple sclerosis and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease. And so Mr. Newport, not being able to get into the trial, started taking the coconut oil twice a day. At this point, he can barely remember how to draw draw a clock. 2 weeks after adding coconut oil to his diet, his drawing improved. After 37 days, his drawings gained even more clarity, and the oil seemed to lift the fog. And in the first 6 days, she started to see this happening. Every morning, he was alert and happy, talkative, making jokes. His gait was still a little weird, but his tremor was no longer very noticeable, and he was also able to concentrate on things that he wanted to do around the house and in the yard and stay on task. Whereas before coconut oil, he was easily distractible and rarely accomplished anything unless he was directed to do so. And over the next year, the dementia continued to reverse itself, and he was able to run again. His reading comprehension had improved dramatically, and his short-term memory is improving. And he often brings up things that haven't happened in a long time. So let's just take a moment and consider what actually happened. The synthetic patentable Alzheimer's drugs have failed. A drug company reluctantly decides to put a non-patented natural substance, medium-chain triglycerides derived from coconut oil, through an FDA trial. It works. But darn it, a smart doctor figures out that the natural food can be substituted for the super expensive drug. Not only that, the ketones from natural coconut oil last in the body longer than the drug version, 8 hours instead of 3. This is enough to make a drug company start worrying about its future. What if this natural health idea really catches on? Coconut oil can be found in just every health food store. Buy the organic, buy the non-hydrogenated, and if you have Alzheimer's, see how it works. And oh, by the way, one of the reasons that we have more brain disease today than ever before is chemotherapy. Quite simply, chemotherapy destroys brain tissue and cognitive function. New research out of Indiana University adds to the growing list of harmful side effects caused by chemotherapy. And according to the science, the chemical cancer industry treatment destroys gray matter in the brain associated with cognition and memory. This was published in Breast Cancer Research and Treatment. The study is the first of its kind to use brain imaging scans to verify the negative effects of chemotherapy on the brain. So, quote from the study, "These analyses suggest an anatomic basis for the cognitive complaints and performance changes seen in patients." That's according to Dr. Sakin, director of the Indiana University Center for Neuroimaging. And so that's important. Just letting you know. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take some calls now, and then we're going to give Glenn Beck some information, and I'm going to talk about hormones. I'll get it all in today because I don't have a guest. Your turn. You can call us now at 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Listening out of Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. And, of course, we have an enormous audience, New Jersey, Connecticut, the northeast part of the United States. But we're also broadcast in over 180 countries worldwide. and the audience is growing substantially on a weekly basis. And I thank you all for that. A lot to share, and I'm going to be taking your calls in a moment. Kara Lee, our program director of the Progressive Radio Network, the fastest growing internet network in the world, is in studio. She'll be reading your mail. We'll be taking your calls, a letter to Glenn Beck in just a minute, and our hormone rebalancing. A lot to talk about. Just one quick announcement. Tomorrow I'll be announcing the beginning of our new six-month Repairing the Brain Naturally, Healing the Brain Naturally workshop. This will be open to people with multiple sclerosis, ALS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, depression, anxiety, and sleeplessness. All these things having to do with the brain. And it's all about lifestyle modification. We will have physicians and neurologists and others who are on board, and we've been working on the protocols for almost 9 months. And we're going to start this in about 2 weeks. So you'll have a chance to call our main number in New York and let them know you intend to be there. And then you will have to provide some documentation for your condition. And again, this will be meeting in New York every 2 weeks for 6 months. And we will be filming this throughout that period of time. And the results will be posted as a film showing the progress and beginning to improvement wherever it is shown. And it'll be a study that we will send out to the scientific community. You can call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, if you wish to attend. I'll be announcing it on my noon show tomorrow, and we will probably be full. I'm only able to take 100 people. That's all that will fit in the room. So that's our Healing the Brain Naturally Health Support Group. This is our 44th Health Support Group, and they've all been really important for all the people who have attended. One other quick thing. My new product, Save the Best for Last, the new and improved red stuff with very high amounts of all the ingredients that I feel are important. Now, I have berry blast, I have red stuff. They do not have the same fruits, totally different. Why? Because let's say you have 20 fruits, and they're all important, but you can't get a large amount into a single serving. So you give a little bit of each. Well, then you do little or no good. So I decided to make two separate products, berry blast and red stuff, so I could give large amounts. For example, we know how healing tomatoes are. So I put almost 1,000 milligrams in each serving, and tart cherries, almost 1,000 milligrams in each serving, and apple pectin, extremely important, acerola, important, mangosteen, that's a real superstar, organic flaxseed, prune, and something you've never heard of before, maqui. Berry, M-A-Q-U-I, very. It's a superstar that dwarfs all the others. I'm the only one that I know of in the world who has this. Blood oranges and red wine extract. Now, normally, red wine extract, I see, goes 15 to 50 milligrams. I'm giving 650 milligrams. And then Peruvian extract, P-R-U-E-N, over 600 milligrams. And then plum, orange, pear, pomegranate, mangoes, watermelon, papaya, passion fruit, kiwi, green tea, 250 milligrams per serving, bromelain, which is great, 200 milligrams, digestive enzymes, resveratrol, almost 200 milligrams, cinnamon, you never see cinnamon at a big milligram, generally 1 milligram, two, I give 125 milligrams, and 8 billion non-dairy probiotics, plus 10,000 ORAC. Now, I didn't make this principally as an antioxidant. That is berry blast. I made this product principally for phytonutrients. Now, I can't make a claim because every one of my shows is monitored by the FTC and the FDA and the Quackbusters, and it'd be very easy for me to step over that line, but I never have, never will. If I told you what I believe and know that this product will do for you, oh, then that would get your attention. So all I can do is just tell you that all you have to do now, I've given you the ingredients, look up for yourself in the scientific literature, and you know why I put them in here. What I can tell you is I defy anyone anywhere to find me a better product at the cellular level than Red Stuff. And I've offered it at $31 off its retail price. And I did not increase the retail price with the new and improved products. I kept it the same, even though my costs are substantially almost 40% more because of the high ingredient list of high potencies. Call to get your red stuff, new and improved red stuff, new and improved, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. One quick note before we go over to Carrie Lee in studio, and this is for Glenn Beck. Glenn, someone sent me the audio part of your show today where the people on your show were mocking aspartame. All the study, you know, thousands of articles that were listed, and it was only anecdotal and nothing bad about it. Not true. For those of us who actually have scholarship in our background, have a science background, we are appalled at how dangerous aspartame is. I'm going to quote from Kirk Nimmo from Infowars.com. Here's what he says. Quote, warning to Glenn Beck, don't drink Diet Cola or Diet Coke. Quote, on Friday, Glenn Beck announced on his radio show that he will be taking a brief leave of absence for medical reasons. Quote, there is something wrong with my voice, and we're not sure what it is, Beck said, according to a transcript on the website. They're going to do a CAT scan and MRIs and MREs and PET scans, and they're going to be doing blood work like crazy, unquote. In July, the Fox News host admitted that he is suffering from macular dystrophy or eye disorders that causes vision loss. Quote, yes, I have a problem with my eyes, unquote. Beck told an audience of 6,000 Salt Lake City, quote, a couple of weeks ago, I went to the doctor because I can't focus my eyes. So I went to the best doctor I could find, and he did all the kinds of tests, and he said that I have macular dystrophy, unquote. Glenn Beck may not know it, but it's almost certain that he is another victim of Rumsfeld's plague. On September 29th, the New York Times published a long article about Beck. Quote, his Mormonism forbids coffee, but he consumes a lot of Diet Coke and chocolate, writes Mark Leibovich. Coca-Cola began putting the sugar substitute aspartame in Diet Coke in 1982, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. Aspartame accounts for over 75% of the adverse reactions to food additives reported to the FDA. Many of these reactions are very serious, including seizures and death. In 1999, The Independent on Sunday discovered that the maker of aspartame, Monsanto, uses genetically engineered bacteria to produce the sweetener at its U.S. production plants. Aspartame is made by combining phenylalanine, which is naturally produced by bacteria, with another amino acid. To make the bacteria produce more phenylalanine, Monsanto has genetically engineered them. Quote, increasingly, chemical companies are using genetically engineered bacteria in their manufacturing process without telling the public, says Dr. Eric Milestone of the Science Policy Research Unit at Suxic University and a member of the National Food Alliance. Here's what Glenn Beck needs to know. Aspartame is linked to blindness. It is made up of 50% phenylalanine and 40% aspartic acid and 10% methyl alcohol. Methyl alcohol inevitably affects vision. Back when the government imposed prohibitions on the country, thousands of people went blind due to the use of wood alcohol, methanol, in spirits. The late Dr. Morgan Rainford, a specialist in methanol toxicity, who I had on this program, warned about the danger of blindness associated with the consumption of aspartame. Quote, this product, NutraSweet, has some highly toxic reactions in the human visual pathway, and we're beginning to observe the tragic damage to the optic nerve, such as blindness, partial to total optic nerve atrophy. Once this destructive process is developed, there's no return of visual restoration, unquote. Rayford wrote in an aspartame fact sheet, quote, when this drug enters the digestive tract, largely the upper portion, the aspartame molecule spins off a byproduct known as methanol or methyl alcohol, unquote. Well, methanol is an extremely powerful neurotoxin. It can produce blindness. It can produce cellular destruction in the brain and spinal cord, in particular in the optic nerves that has to do with our vision. Now, I've had on this program Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he explained during an interview on this program about why diabetics who drink large amounts of aspartame drinks are more likely to go blind, and diabetic retinopathy is a leading cause of blindness. Now, in addition to blindness, a report produced by the Department of Health and Human Services lists over 90 symptoms related to aspartame, including migraine headaches, dizziness, seizures, nausea, numbness, muscle spasms, weight gain, rashes, depression, fatigue, irritability, tachycardia, insomnia, vision problems, hearing loss, heart palpitations, breathing difficulties, anxiety attacks, slurred speech, loss of taste, tinnitus, vertigo, memory loss, and joint pain. Also, the chronic illnesses are triggered or worsened by ingesting aspartame, including brain tumors, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, chronic fatigue syndrome, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, mental retardation, lymphomas, birth defects, fibromyalgia, and diabetes. It is now estimated that over 6,000 food and drink products worldwide contain aspartame. You might be surprised to learn about some of the foods you consume that contain aspartame, besides the obvious products like diet sodas. Chewing gum contains aspartame. And so cereals, ice cream, yogurt, iced tea, powdered drinks, nutrition bars, puddings, vegetable drinks. In addition to neurological and physiologic and eye and endocrine and metabolic problems associated with aspartame consumption, there's another problem. Addiction. Persons consuming large amounts may not suffer aspartame disease, but also have difficulty stopping because of violent and prolonged withdrawal reactions. And it's a dangerous product to consume. So my suggestion is that instead of laughing at this and joking about it, that if Glenn Beck, and again, I could agree or disagree with many of the statements he's made on the air, but I believe that he has a right to be healthy and happy. So if anyone in the audience knows Glenn Beck, please let him know that we have an enormous amount of material, serious material from serious scholars. It's not anecdotal. It's good science showing that this could be a major part of his problem, and he really should do a full and complete detoxification where he could regain his vision and he wouldn't have any problems. But that's his choice. That's up to him. We're here to help everyone, and I would not allow a political or ideological difference to keep anyone from getting the help that they need. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We're waiting for some call-ins right now. We don't have any. I was surprised. I'd have thought we'd have had with this enormous audience a lot of callers. But if you decide you'd like to call in and share your thoughts, please do. Happy to hear from you. Always nice to have people on the air sharing their opinions, questions. 888-874-4888. Well, in the interim, Kara Lee always has questions that people have emailed her. Hi, Kara.
Good afternoon, Gary. Well, first of all, I wanted to start off with making a little announcement to all of our listeners. We are proud to be premiering a video that you cannot see or hear anywhere on mainstream media, which is why we have chosen to make an online premiere, so it's open to everyone from around the world. This is going to be taking place Monday, October 25th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. However, if you'd like to join and you can start it at that time, you'll be able to stream the video as much as you would like within a 24-hour period. The movie that we're going to be starting off with is Autism Made in the USA. It's been to numerous festivals throughout the country, I believe around the world.
150.
Yeah.
One beneficial selection in 50 international film festivals, including the prestigious Cindy Awards and the Houston International Film Festival. Some major ones.
And we are going to be making an online premiere of this video in 2 weeks. The other great thing about tuning in to see this video is that followed by that video playing online, we are going to be having an exclusive discussion led by Gary, moderated by Gary, taking place for an hour or so after the video is done, talking about vaccines and the link between autism, you know, and covering topics that you're really not going to see or hear anywhere else. If you're interested in finding out more information or if you possibly want to join, you can take a look at our latest website, the Vaccine Initiative, www.vaccineinitiative.org. And on the contact section, there's an easy way, an easy link to just send us your email and get involved and get more information as the weeks to come.
Good.
And the first email I wanted to start off with, Gary, it's a long one, so I apologize for that, but it's really, really interesting. It has to do with some of the topics that we were talking about last week. Somebody who emailed me who decided to stay anonymous, but he said it was through the emails that we got and that we were discussing about the AIDS crisis that he decided to go ahead and contact us. So he wanted to start by saying that for more than 25 years, he worked at the heart of the AIDS establishment. He first became aware of you because he was given an assignment by a major AIDS organization that he also chooses not to mention. He would go to a lecture that you were sponsoring and take notes. And at this lecture, there were leading AIDS physicians and scientists holding a workshop and debating for up to 6 hours. And he says, yeah, you can see photos of these things on your website. He's taken a look at them since then. They went to collect information, and the group that he was with, and he did as well, about you and the physicians that were there, in hopes to marginalize you and keep you from having any credibility. He said that in his organization, you were the enemy and the speaker of misinformation. So he was taking a look and trying to discredit you and keeping AIDS victims from having the information that you were presenting so that he could push drugs and promote that this was the way to save their lives. He said that at some of your lectures, there were always people there monitoring you in case anything came up that you said about AIDS. One night, he went to one of your conference, one of your lectures, and he said it was his epiphany. He believed that this was about the mid-1990s. He got there early, and he said that there was already no room in this huge church that they were having it at. So he managed to get in somehow, and he estimated there were over 1,000 people there. At the time, there was a physician speaking, and he was talking about how he was working with you and how you guys had such a great success rate with people with PCP pneumonia, the number one cause for death for people with AIDS. Yet he said he had seen over 2,000 of his patients improve with the protocols that you two had created. He then went on and invited all the people that were treated by him to stand up. He said hundreds of people in the room stood up. Then he asked a question, how many of them had had regular therapy, and all the hands went up. He asked if the therapy and the drugs had gotten them better, and no hands went up. When he asked if it had gotten them worse, yet again everyone reacted. He asked for one person to come forward that had a remarkable story about the impact of your protocol. This was a gay man in his mid-20s that went up to speak. He was an attorney and said that he had been partying hard in the fast-track gay lifestyle. For more than 3 years, he had had infections including hepatitis and herpes 6. He would take massive amount of antibiotics and continue to party until eventually his entire immune system collapsed. He said he took AZT for a couple weeks and started to feel better. But then the drug started to give him horrific side effects. A group of gay physicians that he heard that everyone was seeing, he went to as well, and all they did was increase the dosages. And then he heard about this doctor and went to see him, and this doctor gave him a protocol and also instructed him to read your protocols as well online. The protocol, he said, was extremely challenging. It promoted him to stop all drugs, drinking, smoking, stop taking antibiotics, and go vegan and go raw. It also encouraged mass amounts of juicing. This time, he said, there were times he said he simply didn't want to do it anymore. When he stopped, however, he felt sick again. After about 3 false starts, he decided to give it his full commitment. Around the same time, his roommate passed away, and he said that was his final straw. He stayed on the therapy for 2.5 years. Through that time, his conditions reversed. And after he started to notice the effects of its success on him, he would go to the AIDS meetings, and he was rejected every time he tried to share his story. He was personally attacked for spreading this information, and they blamed him for spreading quackery. He never thought he would see the gays rejecting their own community. The bias was palpable and extreme. He said that there were voices in the media that they refused to listen to. And, you know, while he was there, he was saying that he was there that night giving his testament that everything they're doing and they're promoting on the war on AIDS is wrong. He says, we don't have honesty in our own community to do the right thing. At that point, the attorney asked how many people got improvement and was still denied inclusion by their own community. Most people in the room raised their hands and started shouting to bring forth the truth. For the rest of the evening, doctors and scientists and journalists gave different stories and perspectives on AIDS. And you were the moderator. At the end, everyone talked and mingled and shared in stories for several hours. And this man who wrote the email, he said after spending several hours with these people, one of whom he knew, there was a whole side of the story he had not been aware of. He said at that night he picked up your documentary on the politics of AIDS and did his own private investigations on your claims. He read your articles and found that he could not dispute your facts. 2 weeks later, there was a big party on Fire Island that his AIDS organization company had sponsored. This time he was present with a different mindset. He watched but did not participate as massive amounts of drugs were freely distributed everywhere. This was also taking place at one of the most respected AIDS charities in the world. When he came home that weekend, he realized he was living a lie, that virtually everyone else in the movement was as well. He finally hooked up with a gay journalist in San Diego. He found that this journalist, and who would reach out to all the other physicians and scientists and AIDS dissidents, were also being challenged by the pharmaceutical industry and that they were being ostracized and slandered. He then spoke with a woman who had been at your symposium, a tall woman who was a researcher in the AIDS experiment sponsored by the FDA. She provided enormous documentation that AZT is a fraud. That John Larson, who more than anyone else was writing about AZT, was correct. His job was to discredit him, but now he knew that it was a fraud, so it left him in this predicament. After a year at the conference, he stayed within the AIDS establishment because he could get all the perks and privileges and access to the media. He could travel anywhere he wanted to in the world. But he still had to promote that the only truth was the drug approach. This left him with a huge challenge of either continuing his position or leave and become a whistleblower and expose the truth. He decided to take a sabbatical for about 3 months and said it was a spiritual crisis. After a while, he came back, and at the end of 3 months, he returned from a trip and said he did not have the courage to tell the truth. He was too insecure and stayed within his organization for the next 12 years, knowing the truth and fearing the consequences if he spoke out. He said, "Only last week when I heard your program about the two people who talked about their experience with AIDS and you helping them for free that I felt so humiliated because I could have been one of the voices helping others that every single part of the AIDS establishment is just lies." He said he's going to go on a new journey, a spiritual journey, that this time when he returns, he will have the courage to come out of the closet, not only as a gay individual, but as a person speaking about the truth about the AIDS wars and how thousands of individuals are supporting the wars on AIDS because it supports their lifestyle. He says he's still a coward and will still not come forward because he's afraid of the consequences. Once again, I have to ask what I have to lose at this point in time in my life to promote the truth. I just thought that was a really nice letter, Gary, and I wanted you to hear it.
Well, one of the problems I've seen is that when I was helping all these people who had full-blown AIDS and working with them virtually every day at the center, Tri-State Healing Center, and meeting with the different physicians, straight and gay physicians, that when I ask each of them, the physicians, the people who are getting the treatment, what happens when you go home, when you go back to your work or your social environment, do they accept or reject this? And without exception, they said that they were met with an incredible amount of hostility. And mainly because virtually every inch of the gay and AIDS community, which were one and the same, had people who were pro-lobbyist, pro-spokespersons for the drugs are the answer and not natural approaches. And after a quarter of a century of promoting lies, people don't know the truth, and they're afraid to speak out. And so that's what I have seen. So for the people who have benefited, good for them. For the people like this man who knows the truth but was afraid of the consequences coming out of the closet, not coming out as a gay person. I'm sure he's long ago been out as a gay person, but just coming out as far as telling the truth, because there can be a vicious backlash. Vicious. I've seen this. I've seen it on KPFK in Los Angeles. I saw it on BAI in New York from dysfunctional members of its local station board, of whom there were several, who had an animus and a political agenda that they didn't want me on the station for the simple reason I was an AIDS denialist. Well, of course I'm not an AIDS denialist. I've helped more people than all the people they know combined with AIDS. The difference is I've helped people deal with the real underlying conditions using natural techniques, and today these people are healthy and alive. The people they work with are dead. So at what point do you accept that you're responsible for causing hundreds of thousands of people to die? And you're not going to. It's just never going to happen. So they're in denial of the deaths they've caused, the destruction they've caused, the lives they perpetrate. But this is not unusual. You see this all the time in all forms of endeavors in our world. And so we just keep going forward, and we do our work, and we help people, and the people who got the help and who are testaments to that help. And I remember that meeting that was on Center Park West, and there is, I don't know if there are a lot of pictures. I know there's one picture because I had some red reading glasses I don't need now on, and I had a whole group of scientists, physicians, and activists, and the place was just mobbed. Somewhere I have the film of that. I ought to really find that tape and put it up on the internet. And he wouldn't have found out my protocols on the internet because we didn't have internet at that time, but he certainly would have had my protocols, which I had published at that time. So I'm glad to see. Hopefully he comes back from this trip and has the courage to come forward and tell the truth. But he must also be aware that the moment from inside the establishment he tells the truth, he will also be attacked. And everything they can do to discredit him, destroy him, threaten him, intimidate him, they will do. This is like dealing with organized crime. It's like dealing with the Sopranos. The people who have a lot to lose are not going to allow any arguments against them. Thank you, Kara.
Thanks, Gary.
Let's say hello to Eve from Florida. Hi, Eve.
Hi, Gary. I have a question about garlic. We've heard so much about how great it is to have fresh garlic. Now, the problem is I'm always complaining to my husband because he has bad breath when he eats garlic, and he complains about me. So is there any way to eat, what's the best way to do it? Is there a way to prevent having such terrible bad breath from it?
Yes. Also keep in mind, a lot of bad breath, aside from garlic, happens because people have an overgrowth of yeast in the stomach and intestines, in the colon, and those migrate. Anything that's a tube has the capacity to have air coming back up as well as going out. That's what happens when you burp, and you suddenly can smell what was in your stomach.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeast, even if you floss and brush and clean your tongue with a tongue cleaner, mm-hmm, after you use mouthwash, that'll be okay. But if you have overgrowth of yeast, candida, then that's going to be coming up 24/7. And I know people have had chronic problems with that, in which case they should go on an anti-candida diet. Which is,
yeah, but I'm talking about we're complaining about each other's breath after we
exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm just giving you the larger answer.
Okay.
So not only is your question answered, but other people who just have bad breath without the garlic are answered. Be patient, Eve, even if you live in Florida. All right? So now you're around people whose brains are rotting because of excess vitamin D from the sun. And what part of Florida do you live in?
Gainesville.
Well, that explains everything. That's great, Eve. Live where there's cold winters and no beach and right in the middle of... All right, in any case. So the best, most therapeutic way of using garlic is to use raw garlic in a juice. You will release the most oils, and it's in the oils and the allicin that you have the greatest healing benefit. The ideal amount would be between 3 and 5,000 milligrams a day, or about 3 to 5 grams a day, which is about a quarter of a teaspoon a day. Not a lot. And you can take that down. Now, then what to do for the aftertaste? Always best to take it with a green juice, preferably with parsley, and with basil and or mint at the same time. So if you consume all that at the same time, then you find that you have very little garlic on the breath at all, if any. Mm. Then you can take a little bit of mouthwash and gargle for 60 seconds, spit it out, and then clean the tongue with a tongue scraper gently. And then rinse your mouth with cold water. Then you should have no smell of garlic at all.
Great. I will do it.
Good. Okay. All the best.
Thank you, Gary.
Bye. By the way, following this program on the Progressive Radio Network will be Glenn Ford and Nellie Bailey with Black Agenda Radio. And it's a really popular show, and you won't want to miss it. And let's just see. I have time for one more call, if we have a call here. Do we have another call? If you'd like calling, I'll take one more call at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I did not have a chance to get to hormone imbalance. I will do that tomorrow, either at noon or at 3, depending upon my guest. Now, I have a whole lot of interesting guests coming on this week, including several conversations with remarkable minds. Just a quick preview of what's coming. When I return to the city at the end of this week, I'll be spending 2 weeks in final post-production on Death by Medicine. At that time, we will do a very quiet private screening to see at what level we want to release this. And it depends upon how good it is. I've been sending in ideas for all kinds of animation, and we'll see. But it's going to be finished, the whole film done, ready to go, because we have another film right behind it. Right behind that, we'll be working on How to Be a Healthy Vegetarian, which is a massive film. Now, that film will not be for television, nor will it be for theatrical release. Why? Because I decided to incorporate into How to Be a Healthy Vegetarian genetic engineering, organic farming, and all the different vestibules of vegetarian thought, reverence for life, hygiene, and medicinal longevity. So it's going to be in the neighborhood of 4 hours. For example, just in the section of the film dealing with religion and vegetarianism, we filmed in Africa, Ireland, Israel, Egypt, and top religious leaders talking about how vegetarianism is in alignment with their religion. There's no way to do this subject justice and cut it down, so I'm leaving it at what will be a long, multi-chapter film. And there'll be a book coming with that. I also have a major film on pathologizing children, which is a sequel, Drugging Our Children. One on Greed Street, which is about Wall Street. Which is interesting because I'm watching some of the films that are coming out now, and I'm looking at what they contain and what they don't, and what people are saying about them to see that we have something that's unique and that is completely different than what other people have. Also, we'll be doing a major film, which I'm still filming, on Poverty, Inc., and spending 2 weeks living with people who are poor, the new poor, and what it's like. So that just gives you a brief update, plus 3 new investigative reports, and of course launching our new vaccine initiative website. Let's final call to John from Orlando. Hi, John.
Hi. I had a tetanus shot like 3 weeks ago from, cut, and I'm still feeling like sick and tired. And just a weird feeling, like a natural feeling.
Okay, well, you could be having an effect of the vaccine itself. So what I would do if I were you, I would have a full blood chemistry and full viral load and a full immune profile done. This way your physician can look to see what impact, if any, the vaccine had upon your immune system, your viral load, and your overall biochemistry, and therefore can take some corrective action. Now, once you have that done, if you send me a copy of the profile, then I could help with any of the corrections needed. But first, you have to get the profile done. Okay, all the best, John. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day. Here we go with our next program on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, if I could build my whole world around you, darling.
Null Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.